Today I'm speaking with John Stavoulos. John is a breathwork master trainer, member of the International Breathwork Society, as well as the head of the Australian Breathwork Association. And he has been traveling the world for many decades to educate and facilitate breathworkers around the world, unblocking traumas, relationship shifts, all sorts of different blocks, and launching people into a trajectory of thriving in their life and overcoming personal as well as professional challenges. And breathwork for me is one of the most powerful modalities I've ever encountered, especially when facilitated by John. And I'm so excited to have John here today with me so that he can talk to us about why on earth is this fairly simple technique so powerful and can change people's life. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Sebastian. So I guess breathwork is a technique, a breathing technique. And as you said, it is a pretty powerful tool for transformation. It's been around for about, I'm going to say, maybe 50, 60 years. And there are different schools of breathwork. And I'm talking about the breathwork in the West, because there is breathwork, of course, from the East, which has more of a, I guess, a spiritual significance. When you look at, Asia, you look at the Qi, and in India, you look at prana, which is the energy that comes with breath. But I guess when we look at the Western form of breathwork, and I'm talking about the pure form of conscious connected breathing,
right.
It's a very powerful tool for transformation. There are, as I said, a few lineages. There was the rebirthing breathwork, and then there was other forms that came out of conscious connected breathing. And then there's also the work of Dr. Stanislav Grof, who was a psychiatrist, and he uses what he calls holotropic breathwork, well, the holotropic technique. And that particular breathing technique is about, I think it's 3 hours of breathing, so it's quite an intense process. In the technique that I've learned to do, and I've been doing it for over 30 years now, the conscious connected breathing process is you control the inhale, relax the exhale, and what happens is the client goes into an altered state of awareness, a relaxed state of awareness. And then if you breathe correctly, then you start to, it's like a intergalactic rocket ship inside. It's a non-verbal process. It's a very simple yet very powerful in the sense that if you breathe correctly, it will take you into these deep altered states where you can access subconscious memories, feelings, thoughts. People have all sorts of profound experiences, anything from emotional releases to body releases. So it's a real mind-body connection. And that's, I think, what blows people away the first time they do it. They just kind of go, wow, what is this? And when we work with people, normally we work 10 sessions, one-on-one. And then from there, people can explore it on their own. It's safe enough to explore on their own.
Yeah, look. I mean, it's just mind-blowing when you come like from a more Western approach for people's problem. You talk, you might think about psychotherapy or something like that, but people have to talk about it. They have to be aware of issues or remember the issues properly so that they can work with that. And what I found unreal is that breathwork doesn't even have an agenda, it seems. So if you are in a session like that, and we've done quite a few together, you lie down, you start breathing, and you access all sorts of feelings, all sorts of memories, and it's not even trying, it just comes up. And it just feels like there is this program in us or this part of us that if we go onto that path by actually just using breath to get onto this path, it will lead us to unearthing, I don't know, old traumas. I mean, I've been in group sessions with you, and people experience what happened 30 years ago as if they would be really there any again. And the opposite, people just being absolutely delighted to actually see a different path to an issue they've had for many years and find solutions. And it just blows my mind that the technique is what matters, not necessarily the actual issue you're dealing with. It's all about doing the technique properly, and then it seems solutions come. Do you understand why that is?
I'm not sure. I guess it's like, you know, the breath is the life force, and then as it comes into our bodies, it's a way of purifying, and it kind of stirs up, I guess, suppressed thoughts and feelings and emotions. So, you know, whatever surfaces probably is what the subconscious is ready to deal with on a physical, mental, spiritual, or emotional level. You can come with an intention, Sebastian, as you know. You can come along and say, you know what, I want to work on this block that I have in my life. And yet what will surface could be something completely different. I find a lot of people that tend to do this work, usually the three big areas that people will look at are, number one is health. Two would probably be relationships, because they're really important in life. And three would be career. You know, like work, and then up that other stuff. But the thing about breath work, it doesn't always have to be about, you know, clearing, you know, traumas and stuff. It could also be for expansion or inspiration. I had someone yesterday that had about 13 sessions, and then he had one last week, but which was, he was very scattered. But then he came yesterday and had another session, and it seemed to have really landed him back in his body instead of being in his mind. And he kind of felt really clear. So, you know, people use breath work for all sorts of reasons. And as you said, you know, all sorts of stuff can come up in the form of the original form of rebirthing breath work. That was originally done in a jacuzzi or a spa at 38 degrees Celsius. And what would happen in that particular process of being submerged in hot water with a snorkel face down, if the client can handle it, or on their back, is they would experience a lot of birth memories, or the transition from womb to atmosphere. So in the rebirthing breath work, they look at a lot of primal sort of traumas, like birth traumas, early childhood traumas that could come from your birth. And then what they found was there was a lot of patterns that happened in your life, and choices that you would make in the way that you actually were conceived at the time in pregnancy, the transition from the womb to the atmosphere, your first breath. That all can play a significant role in our unconscious mind and our choices in life.
That's mind-blowing. I've been with you in a group session, and you could even see certain things about people's birth. Like you would say, I think this person there is actually a twin because of the way that they move. That triggers me to think, it's like, so somehow we take the rational, the mind that normally controls all of our memories, we take that away, and it creates a space for other memories to come up. And for whatever reason, our birth memories and the time in the womb are really quite dominant, especially if there's something to work on.
Exactly. And, you know, when I look at my own birth itself, the way I came into the world, you know, first of all, I wasn't wanted. I came 10 years after my brother. And it's a kind of long story, but in a nutshell, of course, I was wanted in the big picture. I was induced at 7 months and 10 days gestation. So I was a prem baby, very sensitive, put in a humidity crib, separated from my mother. So, you know, already there's enough trauma that goes against the natural process, you know, the medical intervention, which was necessary, of course, at that time. So that all kind of affected me. And what I realized was I had a lot of fears. And that's initially when I first did breath work, that's what would surface, is a lot of fear, separation, not being wanted. And that's the stuff I became aware of and worked with. Breath work is based on the concept that our thoughts create our reality. So it is looking at our unconscious, maybe some lies that we believe about ourselves, and being aware of them, and then also looking at the choices we make. And when you become aware of a pattern, then you can choose differently. So, you know, you might see a feeling come up, and then you got to make a choice, and you go, hang on a minute, is this a healthy choice? What is a better choice here? But first of all, awareness is important in our process.
So how can you move through these things? So far we have said, like, basically unearth certain memories, and they come up and you experience them again. But how do you move then as a client of yours into the space where you actually deal with that and peace with maybe what has happened before? Because you see all sorts, right? Like that, probably nothing off limit. And as you said before, I think that's a really important point to make, is people normally only bring up what they believe or what the subconscious believes you can handle with. I find that really assuring, because that basically means is you don't have to fear that if you have something in your cupboard that you really don't want to unearth right now, probably somehow the body regulates itself and says, you know what, I take this bit and I can deal with it. That one, let's not talk about this now. This might come another time. And it seems to be miraculously worked that way and organized itself and regulates itself, which I feel is really ensuring, so people can come and know, all right, I won't leave my relationship. I won't do, you know, this, my world will not fall apart, I guess is what it feels like. Or I won't fall apart.
Correct. I mean, you know, that's the thing I love about breath work is that it is a safe technique. And, you know, what does surface is what you can actually physically handle emotionally, as I said. The thing about it is not to think about what's coming up. It's actually to feel. So breath work is all about feeling. It's about feeling those emotions that are surfacing. It's feeling the body sensations as your body releases, you know, cellular memory, maybe traumas. You may not understand what they are, and that's the thing. You need to delete the need to understand during the process. It's all about feeling. So this is why people get so stuck in the beginning of breath work, in the sense, when I say stuck, is their body is filled with so much life force that they start also to breathe incorrectly by not focusing on the inhale and then pushing the exhale slightly out, and then that can create a lot of paralysis in the body. And that's where we come in as practitioners of breath work, to guide people into controlling the inhale, surrendering the exhale, and adjusting the technique until, as the body is filled up with the life force, it can also release at the same time on the exhale without pushing. Because once you start pushing or start to think, then you get into changing the breath and becoming more, I guess, paralyzed in a session, which is one of the physical sensations that people can experience. And it's quite scary if it happens, and that's where the breath worker will guide you into relaxing the exhale. And depending on, some breath workers will use mouth breathing, some will use nose only, or you can do nose in through the nose, out from the mouth. I mean, that's all significant too. I find that the mouth breathing tends to connect us more with our body, and then nose breathing is more of it's like you fill up with prana and then you come out of a mouth breathing, kind of creates a few peaks, and it can become a little bit more intense in the body. So it's up to the practitioner how they work, and then I like to do both. And then as I advance with the client, then I'll shift them to nose breathing. Or if something traumatic comes up, then I'll shift them to nose breathing. It's more gentle.
So if we hypothetically have an issue, like let's say as a child, and we can't even remember, we got scared so much by a dog that we just have a phobia about dogs. I hope this works, right? I'm just making this up. Sorry. They come to you and say, like, look, you know, I just phobia of a dog, no idea why, but you know, maybe this breathworks thing will help me with this. So you put them in the breathwork state, and you know, they're doing the work, and maybe, I mean, what could happen is then the memory comes up that they don't even remember. How does that then lead to them actually having a better life? Like, is the awareness of the trauma, what happens, you said, like, you don't want to overthink, because it's like, how does that change anything going forward?
Well, look, I think the way it kind of works is that by acknowledging the trauma and feeling it out, not thinking it out, because you can process and think as much as you like, but it's actually about the energy that you've suppressed, you know, the trauma. So sometimes it's not even what the trauma is, it's actually the energy it takes not to visit it again or feel it again. Yes. And I think once it actually moves through you and out of you, then you can integrate it. But when we suppress, it takes a lot of our life force to keep things suppressed, trauma suppressed, or in those locked rooms that we have. So by being able to feel, then we're able to release, and it makes us feel lighter and clearer and more connected. And we can think differently as well, instead of using all our energy into not wanting to go there, not wanting to feel.
Right. So if you walk through life and you meet people, can you see some people that like use quite a bit of energy of like keeping those cupboards closed and you know, managing basically that emotion, maybe not even being conscious anymore about that's happening, but you got that sense sometimes.
Good question. And yes, I think anyone can. And the way I see it is this, the more we become authentic and more self-aware, the more that we've healed our traumas and stay more present in our everyday life. And when I say present is like to actually be here right now and not part of us be there or in the future. Yes. So, yeah, look, I can see it. And the way I see it is through people's behaviors. I think when we are very suppressed, we also have a behavior. So, for example, if we're insecure, we can behave in insecure ways, or we can compensate by being, you know, like an act. So sometimes I call it, you know, like you see guys that have the big macho act in the way they walk, the way they breathe. It's like really uncomfortable. It's kind of stiff. So underneath that, you sort of wonder what's behind there. When you look at people that just want to be seen, want to be loved, maybe they had a childhood that they were neglected, then they can have what's called the star syndrome. You know, they want to look at me, and you're like loud. They're always in your face type people. So sometimes you can look at people's behaviors and, you know, even children, sometimes I've worked with a lot of children in my early days. And sometimes you can even see the way kids act up is obviously a suppressed feeling or emotion or a need. And as I always say in my work, I think what people seek the most in life is to feel loved and connected. That's all we want. We just want to be loved and connected. And I guess the first people we want to feel loved and accepted by are our magical gods, our mums and dads. You know, that's where it all begins. And sometimes, you know, some of our parents didn't know how to parent us properly, show us love, affection, give us our basic needs or wants. So then we go through life, I guess, wounded and looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, the wrong relationships, the wrong jobs. We behave in ways that aren't authentic, you know. Sometimes you can probably see the people that are always pleasing other people, the people pleasers. I'll do that. Underneath that is a longing to be loved and accepted.
So these people come to you, they go through a transformative breath session, and, you know, they're off with the magically and sort of like in a very altered state. I have to say, like, this is something like I haven't taken ecstasy in my life, but, you know, I heard, you know, that this is what it might feel like, because breath work to me gets me into a state that I can physically otherwise not get myself easily into, if at all. Actually, I would say not at all. So they do that. And then what happens to the people pleaser? Are they not people pleasers anymore? Or what would happen next?
I think, Sebastian, it's being aware that you have that behavior.
Yeah.
Like I always talk a lot about, you know, I grew up with a very neurotic Greek mother. When I look at her, when I analyzed and looked at her life and, you know, what she'd gone through, and then, you know, her experiences and her tools of life, which were very limited. And then, you know, she became a parent and quite neurotic, I use the word, it's a Greek word. I'm Greek, so I like to use the word neurotic. What I found was, as a child, you know, I saw things maybe that I shouldn't have seen. And I then made up that I wanted to save my mum. So I created a pattern. Whenever I saw someone wounded, particularly neurotic women, then I had a neon sign that said, come this way. So the thing was, you know, I would say life will bring you the lessons you need until you heal them. And my brother was the same. And what I found was being aware that that's a pattern for me, and it still is, you know, and these neurotic people can come through clients. They can come through friends, they can come through acquaintances, they can come from even total strangers on the street. You know, the universe will go, here you go, deal with this one. So when I see someone like that, that's neurotic, and then I just think, hang on a minute, this is not my job to save them.
Right.
You know, so I'm aware now. Or if I know that someone's in my circle that's kind of neurotic, then I might choose not to spend or engage with them, because it brings up my stuff of wanting to save them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if we have a pattern that, you know, that we have of wanting to please people and go, oh my God, here I am. Why am I doing this? Am I doing it because I really sincerely want to help? Or is it because underneath that is I just want to be acknowledged and seen? Yeah. And then the bottom line is I just want to be loved, right? So that's where I think you can identify some of your unconscious sort of behaviors. It's like the people that are really quiet. You know, why are they quiet?
Why are they quiet?
Yeah, well, probably traumatized children. I don't know.
Right.
list can go on, you know, like people are really shy. I mean, look, when you look at shyness, I guess it's low self-esteem. It's, you know, and self-esteem is, you know, the way we see ourselves in the world or the way we've been told who we are. And some of us are completely beaten down, you know.
You talk sometimes about cultures that you operate in, that you give workshops and they are, you know, quieted, like they're not allowed to speak up. And you see that coming out in the workshops even by sounding.
Yeah, and you know what? And you got to look at how many years do we spend in school, in the school system, right?
Right.
And I'm not blaming the school system. I just don't agree with, you know, that every child is supported in a school system. But sometimes, you know, with the grading, you know, the A, B, C, D, E failures, right? And sometimes people just, you know, you spend all that time in the school system and then you're programmed and then you go out into the world and either you continue being like that mediocre student maybe, maybe you're a failure and you think, well, you know what? Success is the best revenge. So you go out and you become really successful at the cost of your health, you know? And that's where I think being aware of some of our unconscious sort of programming and behaviors, then we can find that middle road, you know, in life and the choices that we make. Because you don't want to be too much in your ego either. And then you don't want to be too much suppressed and blocked up. So I think when you're doing self-exploration, it's about finding the best way to navigate through life and being authentic, carrying less suitcases and, you know, traumas and negative beliefs that we have about ourselves.
Yeah. So would you say that if someone is willing to really face their stuff, or at least say, yeah, willing to be, you know, and say, look, you know, I actually don't know what my stuff is, would you say that breath work potentially could more or less get you out of prison with any issue? Like you've probably seen it all. Would you say it is a modality that potentially, when it comes to traumas and issues like that, you can use it as a universal tool to basically.
I believe so, Sebastian. And I think as long as the practitioner is trauma informed as well, that is, you know, understands trauma and I think can support people in feeling safe enough to release it. And that's the whole thing about breathwork is that, you know, you need to feel completely safe because, you know, when you become vulnerable and open is where you find your strength. You know, yes. It's until you actually break down, you know, and take off the masks and open your shield to your heart and you can come out and let people in. And that's where you can discover more of yourself and, you know, just navigate through life being real and authentic.
Yeah.
And empowered as a human.
Mm. This is why I'm working with you because we met at a particular, what was it? A seminar series, like a whole week of seminars and like a school, a short school. And you were one of the presenters that would facilitate breath work. And for me, it was like, I liked your energy on the stage straight away. I liked what you said. Mm. And I liked your confidence, but I liked your kindness as well. And for me, that's important. I can't work with every practitioner. It's just not possible. If there's no click, and I think it's just important for people to know that, because if you don't have a good feeling for that, yes, you could argue, well, it's probably something to do that. I don't really want to face my stuff, but I would be careful there and say like, well, if you have stuff that you think is significant and that is really precious to you or really, really delicate and makes you really, really vulnerable, you want to have someone on your team you just feel a connection that you feel that person will look after me. I feel totally at ease because during those 3 hours of a session with you, you are completely like, if you want to go deep, you really can't think about, oh, I hope this person doesn't say something mean that actually doesn't sit right for me. You really have the feeling like they have the best, my well-being at heart. This is what they are. This is their purpose. And they can really feel this. And I found that with you is really important. And I think it's a good thing to talk about that a little bit of like, how do you find a good practitioner and are there aspects of personality as well as protocol? I believe that you know a lot about it because you've seen when it goes wrong too.
You know, Sebastian, that is a really good question. And this is one area that I really strongly speak up about. You earlier on when you introduced me, you mentioned that I'm actually the current president of the Australian Breathwork Association. So our association is quite strong. Our members that join up have to be trained a minimum of 450 hours training and by particular schools that we recognize. I'm really proud to say that Australia has created the most amazing ethics and standards for breath workers worldwide. We actually shared our standards and ethics and all our procedures to the Global Professional Breathwork Alliance, which is based in the US. So practitioners that are fully qualified will register with them and will be recognized worldwide following the ethics standards and trainings. You also mentioned that I'm on the International Breathwork Foundation. So this is a European-based foundation for breath workers. I've been with them for many, many years now, and I've had a role for the last 5 years as on the integrity committee. So we handle complaints against practitioners of breathwork. But unfortunately, what's happening around the planet now, and when I look at breathwork has gone from the fringe to mainstream now. So, you know, you probably open up your social media and you see someone doing breathwork. What I'd like people to know is that if you're going to work with a breathworker, number one, you've got to make sure that they are registered and certified with, if you're in Australia, with the Australian Breathwork Association or with the Global Professional Breathwork Alliance. The problem we're finding is, and honestly, Sebastian, I can have a full-time job on the integrity committee following up people that have breached ethics worldwide. The problem is if a practitioner is not trained properly and they're not registered, there's nothing that we can do as an association or a foundation to support the, you know, the people, the victims, so to speak. And that's where people need to realize that a two-day course doesn't qualify you as a breathwork practitioner. Neither does an online course. The thing is that when you train, you really need to be face-to-face in a training, and you have to tick off a whole bunch of criteria and, you know, like trauma-informed practitioners. So when you're looking for someone, I suggest you always look at an association directory, and we have one on the Australian Breathwork Association, as well as Global Professional Breathwork Alliance as a directory. The International Breathwork Foundation kind of is a foundation where all breathwork modalities can join, but you'll see a professional member next to their name. That means they are certified to the highest standard. And this is what we're working on. What's happened, because there's been a big breach of ethics with some breath workers, even registered ones, that we've had to unregister. The good that came out of that was a professional development team has emerged. It's a worldwide team of, you know, from doctors to psychologists to breath workers to trainers, and they've all come together now, and they're creating an international umbrella of ethics and standards, and then all of us to liaise and connect. So the important thing is that the public, the people, are safe out there, because honestly, if you ring up a breath worker, they should at least give you 15 minutes of their time. And I actually wrote an article, a blog on this. It's, you know, like how do you find a practitioner? And maybe I can share it later.
Yeah.
The thing is that, you know, talk to the practitioner. If you, you know, and you should feel some connection. If you don't, then trust yourself. And the other thing is that when you finish the phone call, you should be left with some hope, because we all need hope, right? And like you said, when you do go to someone and you do open up and you are vulnerable, you want to feel safe. And I know for me personally, Sebastian, safety is the most important thing in holding a space and being present for my client in order for them to go as deep as they can inside themselves to heal them. The only thing I'm going to do on the outside is create the safety, maybe ask the right questions, the right guidance, correct the breathing. I don't have to do much other than that, and just trust the breath, the process itself, for the client to get the most out of it. And that's how it is in a nutshell.
Just to really paint the picture, I mean, what can go wrong if ethics are not observed? Like, what could be the issues used with that?
A lot of things.
Right. Look,
anything from practitioners, you know, ripping people off financially, two is touching them inappropriately. That's one of the, you know, like in all professions, I'm sure you know, there are these people, and unfortunately it has happened in breathwork. And I think when I look at the old schools of breath work, you know, back in the 70s. I think they're all about free love and stuff like that. But, you know, the world has changed now. We need to respect people's boundaries. You know, for example, you know, if we're going to do some touching during the breath work, it'll be like, you know, on your shoulder, or it might be, you know, I gently tap someone on their chest to remind them to breathe high up, or I might open their mouth, you know. So all of that has to be with consent. It is so important that, you know, like if someone's had a trauma and they don't like being touched, we need to respect that. You know, where I've been in group sessions where, you know, like people, practitioners come and are really forceful. And, you know, as I said, there are different schools of breath work. I'm just not into the traumatic breath work or the cathartic breath work. In my early days, we did study all that stuff. I think today, the breath itself is powerful enough to open people up. We don't have to be, you know, cathartic on the outside. You know, there are some breath work schools that do teach all that intervention and pushing and yelling and, you know, I don't think that's needed anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it can re-traumatize people. And a lot of breath workers are probably on the same page as me about this now. The less intervention and even the less thrashing around and moving around, I don't think it's necessary. I think if we just trust the breath, it'll just fill you up with what you need and release gently. And I always say gently and childlike and innocently. It doesn't have to be cathartic and painful. I mean, look, sometimes stuff comes up that is so intense. And yes, people are going to express that or feel it out.
Yes.
I just don't encourage it, all this catharsis and yelling and screaming. I mean, look, it does happen sometimes, but it's not always necessary either, where a lot of these practitioners just keep, the way I see it is they just keep people in trauma. So you need to choose carefully when you are choosing a breath worker and make sure they are trained.
Yeah, I remember like the vulnerability and the openness that can happen after a breath session is as such that if once an experience we had a breath session and I had to go somewhere and it was more rushed than I thought and someone was quite upset with me and it felt like 100 times as strong as it probably really was and it took me like I emotion like. My body really felt it. Like I felt scared for the next 2 days. It eventually went, but you know, and this was afterwards, but you know, if I imagine that someone in my session would plant thoughts or really do something to trigger release or whatever it might be that, you know, whatever, however you can interfere in such sessions, I don't know because you don't do it. That it's not to underestimate it. So I can see what you mean. Yes, you know, you would re-traumatize. And, you know, if you have someone who's quite dodgy, they would probably say, you have to have more sessions, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing, too, I find is the practitioner should not interpret your session either. You know, they say, oh, I'm seeing, you know, this is happening to you right now.
Oh, really? Okay.
And, you know, they should not direct it. I find personally a good breathwork practitioner will ask questions. What was that like? What did that remind you of? What was the feeling? Not what I see. I mean, look, sometimes we see things that are, you know, you might see a pattern that happens in a lot of cases. And you kind of, in my head, I go, oh, okay, this is looking like this. But I'll ask a question to see, can that person connect with what I just said? It should not be guided by, you know, the interpretation or the personal experience, because it is a personal experience. So the only thing we can do is, you know, I might say, oh, look, my observation is this. What was it for you? Not to change it for you. And the thing about breath work is, yes, after a session, you're completely open, you know, energetically too. So if you are going to go out into the world, you have to be careful. You know, if you're going to go into a space of negativity or toxicity, so to speak, or upset, it can, you know, it kind of affects you because I think it takes a good 72 hours to fully integrate a breathwork session, you know, to land. Because what happens is, you know, it's like you fully come back into your body, you're fully embodied after a breathwork session. And it takes time to integrate this new feeling, you know. And also, I know for myself that I always get the most insight towards the end of a breathwork session. I get a lot of distinctions. I go, oh, I get it. And then even as the day goes on, I feel like I don't always understand it. However, I feel lighter and I feel more connected and more present. And sometimes with breath work is you need to fully integrate a session after. So, you know, and then you go back out into life, in your living life, And it's like the collective consciousness, the garbage, the negativity all kind of lands back in us. And it's almost like, oh, it's time for another breathwork session. And it's like a purification process, you know, like, and there's so many ways, you know, people, you know, like I find people are so disconnected from nature and the natural rhythms of life now. So, you know, things like going into nature, meditation, 5 minutes of breathing, sun gazing, moon gazing, whatever it is, you know, connecting with animals. There's different ways that we can clear ourselves. And that's, I think, what I'm finding with humans everywhere I go, people are living in so much stress and fear and so disconnected from the present, so stuck in their minds.
Yeah. No, I'm at the moment really aware that, you know, we think a lot and we do a lot, but we aren't that much, like just being like, you know, like we're always on our phones. And I think with teenagers or kids in general, even, you know, there's never this time to actually be bored and ponder. And what happens, and this is something we don't acknowledge or don't understand, is that there are processes that can only happen when you're in that state. And that is really like reflecting, that, you know, thinking about it, digesting it in a sense, you know, digesting all the input that you have. And breath sessions do help me to find that space of just being. And you're right. Like I would call it the same way. You're really in your body at that moment. You feel your body. And with that technique, for whatever reason, normal thoughts and about, you know, your schedule for today or the to-dos of the week go away. It really just focuses on what's coming up. And you sort of like off service of yourself. That's like my awareness is there in my body watching what's coming up. And that's a really nice place to be, because you really honor that needs to happen and you give it that time and presence. And then you do it to yourself, but still there's a gratefulness of doing it to yourself. It's almost like you two people. One is like, hey, I need more attention. And the other one is like, I will give that to you now. I will do my best to really breathe the way that it needs to be so that this works. It's a beautiful state.
It is a beautiful state. Yeah. And, you know, for me personally, I like to do breath sessions at least every month, if not a couple of times a week. And my favorite, of course, is the hot water breath work. It's always my favorite. So it is a really way of, you know, connecting and centering, you know, and as I said, we're so disconnected. It's kind of sad. Sometimes I step back and think, you know, we're the only creatures that actually pay to live on this planet. You know, we've got to work, we've got to pay our way to live here. And then, I think of people that go through such traumatic times in their lives, you know, and then they have to reevaluate their lives and look at what is important in my life right now.
Yeah.
You know, like if I had 1 year to live, would I be doing this? Would I be making these choices? So I think self-reflection is very important.
Yeah.
In life. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the awareness or the tools to be able to self-explore. But yet, sometimes life throws you some massive curveballs, traumas that, you know, people kind of wake up and then they have a turning point in life. Like I'm just thinking of someone that I've been working with and, you know, they've had some trauma at work to the point it affected their health, you know, and then they had to make choices. They kind of reevaluated their whole life. They looked at their health. They looked at how they relate to people. They looked at their personal lives.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you look, even through awful traumas and like good things can turn around if you have the tools. However, I think if you're pretty open and aware person, I think reflection is always important, you know, and things like I always say to my clients, you know, take 10 days and go away by yourself with no books, no nothing, no electronic, no nothing. Just be with nature completely, you know, because people then are going to be in nature and what are they going to want to do is distract themselves, read, eat, whatever. I don't know. But I think it takes... you know, even if it starts with 4 days and work up to 10 days. There was a breath worker and they termed it the three S's, seclusion, solitude, and separation. You know, separate, you know, from everyday life, go into solitude in a secluded place and really connect with you, connect with nature, and you, and there will be so much growth and awareness and you can make some amazing changes, you know, meaningful changes in life.
It's so much in our face being connected, doing all the time, that I was just wondering what would that be like to actually leave my phone for a week behind. I've met people who have done it, like, you know, who just said like, look, you know, this was enough and, you know, I can do this. Wow, is this even possible? Can I survive? Will things make? But yeah, it would be amazing. Look, something that I would love to ask you is, so there are all these different techniques out there. I've experienced yours. I've experienced a few, but this one to me has stood out as being extremely, well, it suits me because it goes deep. It's very powerful. It's not dramatic in the sense of, you know, like it's really just a calm and gentle process, as powerful as it is. So why do we have all these different techniques, and are there different uses for them, or is it just preference?
Are you talking about the breathwork
techniques?
So for example, in breathwork, there is of course, the hot water breath work, which is one of the early ones that they explored with. I like it where my thumb thing comes from. As I said, the hot water kind of brings back, you know, your primal birth memories and experiences there. There is the traditional breath work session that, you know, you're going to lie down, be covered. The breath worker sits with you and holds space while you breathe. That's the general one that most people do, a private session. Then it's also group breath work. And group breath work is interesting again, because what can happen in a group is, you know, someone is emoting something in the other side of the room, they're crying or laughing, and that can trigger stuff in you. So sometimes in group, it's kind of interesting. I think 2 weekends ago, I was interstate doing a group breath work session for a family. Now, that was very healing and very, I've done many of those over the years. However, they're very special. So if you get, imagine a whole family getting together, you know, mom, dad, grandparents, kids, and the breathwork session. Sometimes you get a lot of that, you know, that family healing, ancestral healing happening. So the group sessions are very interesting. Again, that they need to be guided well and duty of care, one practitioner to 10 people. The largest I've done is about 800 people. Which was pretty amazing. It was more of an introduction in a country where there wasn't a lot of breathwork awareness. There's also sometimes with breathwork, we can also do open eye breathwork, where you keep your eyes open and you could be nature. You could be looking at the practitioner. And the toughest one is if you do a mirror breathwork, looking at yourself. That is really tough, because that it's like you're actually looking at yourself, who you are, one of 8 billion people living on Earth right now. And it's like you really see yourself, and it could be kind of, it can be a really intense process, and yet it can be very empowering to be able to really see yourself. What other breath work? Oh, well, rebirthers or breath workers have also done cold water breath work. And this is way before the Wim Hof technique of the cold water ice baths. That's completely different, because you got to remember, conscious connected breathing is more of a, I'm going to say, psychotherapeutic experience, you know, where, you know, cold, the Wim Hof technique is just a technique which is, you know, different to, I'm sure people still come up with feelings and emotions, but with the cold water breath work, it can bring up a lot of fear, even fear of death, for example. And the process has to be done 100% with integrity, which means when you put your feet in the cold water, you breathe until they get warmer, then you move forward. If you start to shiver, you get cold, you have to come back out. There's a lot of breath workers that are trained in this. I've done this work, and because I'm a trainer, I also train people with all the different styles of breath work. That's about it, I think, with all the different styles of breath work that, you know.
Yeah. So you just, as someone who's looking into it and said, oh, I'm interested in that, you would just, would you say, I just try different things to see which format works for me?
Yeah. So when I was in Europe, for example, I had a lot of access to natural hot water springs, like thermal springs. And I've just got the most beautiful memories of the most amazing locations where people can be in this beautiful hot water breathing, you know, and that's really special too, you know, when people can go back to their birth memories or feeling, you know, safe in the womb feelings, or, you know, it's a very yummy experience.
I haven't done it yet. Yeah, I'm really keen.
Yeah.
Why do you think at this time of where we at in society, does breathwork become like a mainstream tool and modality that people want to explore and practice? What do you think is the main reason for that?
I don't know. Sometimes I look at that too, and it's like, you know, like I always used to think, why doesn't everybody know about breathwork? You know, why isn't breathwork taught in schools, you know? And what I'm seeing now is maybe it's a collective consciousness that's happening on the planet. You know, look, when you look at our parents, Sebastian, they probably didn't have, you know, the internet. They didn't have books to go and read about self-development. Yes. And I think what's happened is, you know, it's like a trend, I guess. You know, like a lot of modalities, even yoga, think about yoga, you know, it started off in India. Now it's become, you know, it's gone into mainstream, but along the way, it's also become bastardized, you know, and changed. And it's, you know, when you look at the origins and the, you know, what real yoga was, same with breath work and meditation and, you know, all these things are coming into mainstream. And I think we live in a time of high stress and a lot of stimulation. And I think a lot of people are just yearning and craving and wanting more peace and connection, not only with other people, but themselves. So, you know, and here's breathwork now coming into the mainstream and, you know, people exploring it.
Yeah. No, that makes good sense. And I always believe that, you know, there are two ways of looking at the time that we're in. This one is just the worst time ever. Because, you know, it's busy and, you know, we have so many challenges, many things go wrong, but it's also the best time. And one of the reasons is that knowledge is accessible. You know, breathwork is everywhere. And if you really want to explore it and read about it or, you know, test it, there are ways to find out more about it. And I think that's a blessing. And yeah, it's really what you make out of it, I guess often.
Correct.
Now, I was wondering whether you could just tell us, how did you actually get into this? Like, what was your trigger to find out? Because, as you said, it wasn't around as much some years ago. And you've been doing this for around 30 years,
I believe. Since 1990. But how I got into it in a nutshell is like this. I look at myself as this young man that probably didn't have any tools on life at all. You know, and my parents migrated to Australia. You know, I had to integrate into a society with two cultures. So the long story was I'd heard about rebirthing, so to speak. I had started to do some business courses and stuff, you know, to give myself some tools. I call myself the accidental breath worker because I kind of fell into it accidentally. Yeah. And what happened was I lived in the US and I had a very traumatic experience there. And, you know, in life we go up and down, but we tend to go up on the graph of life. But I just kind of went and fell off the graph, the dark night of my soul. Right. I had a really traumatic experience. Everything I believed in, all my beliefs, my values, everything just changed overnight. Basically, I was in a very cathartic state. And I was rock bottom, so to speak, emotionally. I was traumatized. It's a long story. I actually wrote a book called Breathing Into a New Life. I talk about in detail what happened to me and then how breathwork supported my journey. So I came back to Australia and basically stayed in bed for a month. My parents were very worried about me. And I kind of laugh when I look at my life from, you know, the New York days. I just came back with a bag and I think I had some my workbooks, some my diplomas, and one mirror, the star mirror that I bought for my apartment. That's the only thing that was left. But in there was a little cutout about rebirthing and a tape by Louise Hayden. Back in the days of the tapes, You Can Heal Your Life. Never had heard about it, but I was doing taekwondo and someone had given it to me. I remember there came a point where I needed to reach out and get some help. You know, I had no tools on how to navigate what I was going through. So I rang up a rebirther, as they were called back in those days, and I had a session. It was very profound. I think as a man, for being able to sit in a space and just go and be vulnerable and just share what I'd gone through with someone was really powerful. The breathwork experience itself was really amazing. I kind of felt, I don't know what happened in that room, but I feel like 16 suitcases came off me. I feel lighter, I feel more present. I had no idea. Went off into the world. People saw that I looked different. I was starting to engage in life again. And then the breathwork had said, when you're ready, come and have another session. So I went and had another session. And I tell you what, Sebastian, I hated the experience. I was completely paralyzed. I was like, I couldn't talk. And what was happening for me there was I was starting to connect with my birth trauma, and I had a very, very traumatic birth. So between that second one and I actually had up to 30 sessions where I was completely in so much physical and emotional pain, because what I didn't understand at the time, and it was such extreme fear, and I get it now because I had such a fearful entry into the world. You know, when I came into this world, it was not easy for me. It was very painful. My birth itself was a complete trauma. So when I finally realized that I actually had to feel what was surfacing in order for me to release it, that's when I, you know, look, I'm saying every session was profound, but when I finally got it, that I actually had to feel this stuff, that's when my life, you know, just went up. And I trained as a breath worker, only because I was I'm a remedial and sports therapist as well. Worked with, you know, the Australian Sports Commission and lots of elite athletes, and I've had a pretty amazing career traveling the world with that. So I got into breath work more for myself, and then I started working with my son because he'd been through some trauma as well, doing the breath work technique. And from that, other parents started to bring their kids. And then I started to work with children with trauma, birth trauma, children with grief. And then I started working with parents and their children with problems. And then I was working with couples. And then before I knew it, I was working a lot, directing my breath work to stress in the new millennium and people working with stress. So then I just went international with that. But because I was traveling with my sports career, I was able to meet other pioneer breath workers, you know, the original breath workers, and I'd interview them and find out how they worked. And then I connected with the international breathwork community. And of course, the internet came, and here we are, you know. So, my journey with breathwork has sort of started, and then it's just projected to where I am now. And I'm still constantly learning. And I think breathwork is a big part of my life. It's, you know, like
a breather for sure.
Yeah. I love it, and I just love how it creates massive transformation for people. I don't know how it works sometimes. I'm always at conferences every year learning about science of breathwork. That's one area that really fascinates me. And what I've seen more and more, Sebastian, is more science behind breathwork now. It's not so much woo-woo anymore.
Yeah.
For me, I like some science and understanding what happens physiologically, you know, to the body, to the mind. I think it's really important in this process, this technique being more credible as well to that world.
That is cool. John, what I found amazing is you can actually do this online, especially if you've met people before in person, but even if not. And I think that's a great opportunity. And I think that's what I want to leave with, is like, you are actually available for online consultations as well, which I think is a huge privilege if you can get into John's schedule. If people want to find out more about you and want to connect with you, what are the best channels to find you?
Well, probably best will be my website, which is johnstamoulos.com. And then, of course, there's the social media pages that you can find me on. What I wanted to say about the online, the highest form of breathwork for me is always being in person with someone.
Yes.
There are so many cues that, you know, like when you're working with people, you really pick up on people's energies and their thoughts and the way they move. You know, you get a lot of feedback from that. However, even before the pandemic, in 2013, actually, I started doing online sessions, and I thought, how can this be done? So, you know, what I've got in my office is I've got two huge screens. So what I did is I set up definitely duty of care. There always has to be someone in the house with you. I need to know your address, your phone number, emergency numbers, because nothing ever really goes wrong. The worst thing that ever happened was once, I think it was with someone in Denmark, the screen blacked out for a second or 5 minutes. So all I did is just call the other person in the room. They reconnected the screen. And sometimes if someone's going through some trauma, then I will ask the other person that's either in the room with them during the breathwork session. Some people choose to have someone be a sitter. So they look at me, but I also have their WhatsApp, which I can send them messages to, you know, like I might say, touch them there or open their mouth or, you know, comfort them or wipe their tears. So they're my hands. So it works. And then if I see that people don't go into paralysis, then the sitter, so to speak, can be in another room, but in the house. So that, and it still works, especially when you set your laptop or computer where I can see you lying down and I can at least observe your breathing. So when we set it up, my assistant usually will send out the whole protocol of how to set up an online session with me. Yeah. And, you know, we've done plenty of posts online together.
And maybe the first 5 minutes of the first session was like, how would this ever work? And is this what it should feel like? But before you know it, you are so deep in the process. And at the end of the day, it's you feel, or I feel, just as observed and looked after online, really, than in person. I know what you mean. It, in person, of course, is a little bit different. But look, you know, before I don't have any session with you, I have it online, and it's profound. It's just, you know, so profound anyway. And highly, highly recommend it. It's one of the most powerful tools I've encountered. And what a blessing to have access to tools like this, because I believe it makes the world a better place, because it helps people to get, you know, really move into who they really are and how they can shine in the world. It's absolutely fantastic.
I think as humans, Sebastian, you know, like we all want to be connected. We all want to go back to community, you know, and that's what I ought to, is I see these beautiful little groups of people that are wanting to connect and create that community again, because we've lost that. And that's the importance of even group breathwork. I've been running a group breathwork here in Adelaide for the last 20 years. And sometimes I see people from 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. But what I love is the community feeling at the end, you know, where people are just so connected. I can't even get rid of them. It's like, go home now. You know, they're still hanging around. And I think conscious communities are very important in the world. And I think we all yearn to have that connection with our communities and the love and the safety. And I guess we need to create it with us, our families, and then it spreads out.
Yeah, it starts with the me. Is that what one says? Starts with yourself first, and you know, only then you can, you know, help others. I think it's so true. And thank you so much. I really want to thank you for all your work that you also put into actually creating this framework worldwide, because it does make this breath work a safer and more effective modality. And I guess, you know, it gets a good press that it really deserves, because it is looked after by associations that really make sure that this is, because it is so powerful, you really make sure that people use it properly. So thanks for your work, and thanks for being on the show as well. Love it.
Thank you so much, Sebastian. My pleasure.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you, John.